we all worry about when the climate change, especially the water, when it comes up. So they all cause in our homes, in our houses.
Samoans struggle to keep their heads above the sea. It's Friday, November 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead this half hour, can North Korea be trusted? The Rohingya refuse repatriation, and office buildings become sentient. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. When the 116th Congress is seated in January here in Washington, one of the new members will be Tom Malinowski. But the New Jersey Democrat is no newbie. Previously, he served as Assistant Secretary of State. High on his list of legislative priorities is North Korea's human rights record, an issue largely downplayed in the first 2 years of the Trump administration. As he told VOA Korean Service's Eun Jung Cho, he now hopes to change that.
I hope to work in the Congress to make sure that the State Department has the funding it needs and the support it needs to fund all of the programs that have been supported in the past to get information to the people of North Korea, broadcasting, radio and television, information about the outside world in books and CDs and thumb drives, and all of these things that that NGOs have been doing with the support of the U.S. government and the South Korean government.
This specific activity that you're mentioning about was actually part of the Reauthorization Act, North Korea Human Rights Reauthorization Act, that was passed this year. Do you plan to come up with another kind of a legislation or a bill or a resolution regarding this information activity?
No, I think what's needed is to provide the money and to make sure that the State Department is spending it on these programs. There's, I know, a little bit in the budget of my former bureau, Democracy and Human Rights Bureau, but there's more that we could do with additional funding. I certainly look forward to reaching out to the South Korean government to encourage them to support these programs as well. You know, so I think that's the main thing. I want to make sure on a different front, I want to make sure that the United States is still open to taking North Korean refugees. My understanding is that numbers have declined in the last 2 years coming to the United States, and that we continue to support efforts by the United Nations to document human rights abuses in North Korea.
Has the funding at the Democracy and Human Rights and Labor, specifically on North Korea, has that funding decreased from past administration or the year before?
I'm not sure exactly where it is right now. I've been focused for the last few months on my election in New Jersey. But I know that even when I left in January of 2017, we felt that we could have done more with more funding. So I want to do my best to make sure there is sufficient funding in the years to come.
And do you think the current South Korean government, with your encouragement, will be willing to come up with some kind of funding for sending an information to North Korea? What are your thoughts about South Korea's position right now to pursue peace and look over the human rights situation of North Korea?
I don't think there can be long-term peace on the Korean Peninsula until the human rights situation in the North improves. And there's no contradiction between engaging in diplomacy to pursue peace and continuing to help the North Korean people.
Congressman-elect Tom Malinowski. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The tribunal judging the criminal responsibility of former Khmer Rouge leaders will issue verdicts Friday in the latest and perhaps last of such trials. Fresh Taliban attacks have killed more than 40 government troops in Afghanistan's western Farah province. Students and alumni of several Chinese universities are sounding the alarm over the apparent detention of more than a dozen labor activists. And Sri Lanka's political crisis deepens after lawmakers approve a no-confidence motion against the prime minister. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. None of the first Rohingya Muslims on a list to return to Myanmar showed up at their departure points in Bangladesh on Thursday, the first day that they were scheduled to be sent back under a repatriation agreement between the two nations. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the move comes as the United States is pressuring Myanmar to resolve the crisis.
Confusion and fear in this refugee camp in Bangladesh, where Rohingya Muslims are faced with the prospect of being returned to Myanmar. Some refugees told VOA's Bangla service they don't want to go back.
The Myanmar people tortured us and slaughtered us, so we came here for safety. We came here to seek justice.
We don't ask for much. We just want our rights. If we get our citizenship, we do not need repatriation. We will go back on our own.
Since 2017, hundreds of thousands of Rohingya have fled Myanmar to escape targeted attacks, including murder and rape by the military. The military repression came in response to attacks by Rohingya militants. Last month, Bangladesh and Myanmar announced they would begin returning the Rohingya, a move rights groups say is reckless.
They need justice and they need assurances that they're not going to go right back into a conflict situation where they're going to be persecuted and abused all over again. None of these assurances have occurred.
Fearing a forced return, some Rohingya refugees have fled the camps. Human Rights Watch says Bangladeshi troops are trying to stop people from leaving.
And on top of that, the list that was provided between the Bangladeshi and the Myanmar officials was a list that was essentially taken at random. I mean, I spoke to the head of refugee repatriation in the Bangladesh government, who said, yeah, we just took a registration list and used that. So there was no informed consent.
Meanwhile, in Singapore for a regional summit, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence on Wednesday chastised Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, over the crisis.
The violence and persecution by military and vigilantes that resulted in driving 700,000 Rohingya to Bangladesh is without excuse.
Some experts welcome a tougher U.S. response.
You see this miscarriage of rule of law and justice in Burma, where the Burmese military literally acts with complete impunity. I think that it's so important for the U.S. and for the West, for other nations, to really press on these Southeast Asian nations and to say, we're watching you, and we're going to hold those individuals accountable.
Myanmar's government denies persecuting the Rohingya, saying it was only responding to 2017 attacks by a Rohingya armed group. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, the head of Walmart's Indian venture Flipkart Group, Bini Basal, has resigned following an internal probe into serious personal misconduct. Walmart said on Tuesday two people familiar with the matter said it involved an accusation of sexual assault. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence Thursday told an Asia-Pacific summit in Singapore that plans for a second U.S.-North Korea summit are ongoing and expects President Trump will meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un sometime after the new year. Summit host Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong also indicated that the summit made substantial progress on what is expected to be the largest free trade regime in the world, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP. Rajiv Biswas is chief economist for IHS Global Insight in Singapore. He told VOA's Victor Beatty he's not surprised that the RCEP was not finalized, as earlier reported, by year's end, given the 16 nations involved, including India and China, and the complex chapters that are painstakingly being approved.
They've concluded five more chapters of the pact this year. So altogether, they've now concluded seven of the component packs of the RCEP. But I think there's still some gaps on some issues. So clearly, it wasn't possible to conclude it this year. And now the ambition is to try to get it through by next year. I think, obviously, this is not what Singapore had wanted. Singapore had intended that, you know, during its presidency of ASEAN, that they would get the pact concluded. But there's still a lot of work to do on another 11 chapters, so it's not going to be an easy task to get them all wrapped up. In particular, I think, you know, some of the bigger countries have concerns about some of the details, particularly, I think, in the case of India.
Among those concerns, perhaps India is a bit nervous about giving Chinese companies greater access to its markets.
I think that's a real big concern because India does have a large bilateral trade deficit with China, and it's mainly because of large imports of Chinese manufacturers into India. And they're concerned that if you have a free trade deal in through the RCEP process, which basically would eliminate tariff barriers for manufacturers, that Chinese manufacturers might flood into the Indian market and significantly undercut the domestic industrial sector. So I think those are the reservations that are now quite a significant issue. I think there's issues on agricultural market access for some of the agricultural exporting countries who want greater access in some areas of agriculture and to some of the markets where there's significant protection of agriculture. And also, I think in the area of services, there's some issues about the ability of workers to go across borders. So there's still significant matters to be resolved, although at a high level, at a leadership level amongst RCEP, I think leaders are keen to get this deal through, particularly in an environment of rising global protectionism. They want to show that the Asia Pacific is leading in trade liberalization. But on the ground, there's still a lot of hard work to do to try to get the remaining chapters concluded. So we'll have to see whether that actually is possible next year. I think there's still a lot of work to be done to close the gaps. So it may maybe more protracted even than next year. So at the moment, I think we really have to see how the talks progress because it's, I think, a tall order to get all the 16 countries on the same page, given that there's still a number of chapters open. To have it all signed and sealed by the end of next year might be still a difficult challenge.
Rajiv Biswas of IHS Global Insight.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Asian markets were mostly higher Thursday. Japan's Nikkei shed 0.2%, but the Hang Seng was up 1.75%, and the Shanghai Composite rose 1.4%. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. First and worst is how environmental campaigners describe the impact of climate change on the people of Samoa in the South Pacific. The Polynesian nation of 200,000 people fears it will feel the full force of more frequent tropical cyclones that rising sea levels will drive them from their homes on the coast, with disastrous consequences for the lucrative tourism industry. VOA's Phil Mercer has more.
The flight time to appear is 1 hour and 45 minutes.
Samoa is a jewel in the South Pacific. Its Polynesian culture is rich and heartfelt. Then there are the reefs, beaches, and rainforests. Tourism generates about 20% of Samoa's income. But as the island's popularity increases with travellers from Asia and Europe, there is the growing threat of climate change. In February, Cyclone Geeta tore into this part of the South Pacific, causing widespread flooding and damage. Langi Poiva Sherelle Jackson from the Samoa Conservation Society believes tropical storms are becoming more frequent and severe.
This particular hotel was underwater in the highest I've ever seen in my lifetime. And it was quite dangerous for the tourists who were here because it took them a while to get out. The water came in so fast that there were still guests in the room.
So where we're standing now, we would be underwater.
Where we're standing right now, we would be underwater. Yeah. So in previous cyclones and flooding, it would come up to our hips. But for Cyclone Geeta, you know, it would have been over our heads. We are standing on a multi-million dollar investment that was basically ruined, and all that money was lost, and that investment was lost because of the impacts of climate change.
Most Samoans live on a narrow coastal strip on two main islands. Viola's village near the capital Apia sits around mangroves, where children catch crabs to supplement the community's meagre income. Homes here are barely above sea level, and when the wild tropical storms come, they are swamped, sending villagers to higher ground.
Yeah, we all worry about when the climate change, especially the water, when it comes up. So they all cause in our homes, in our houses.
Samoa has tried to tame the Pacific Ocean with a giant seawall. But its ferocity during cyclones has caused immense damage over the years. Susanna Becken, a professor of sustainable tourism at Griffith University, says that vulnerability is harming the nation's reputation as a safe place to visit.
Every time there's an event like that, it gets harder to get back on the feet. There's also the perception, I mean, tourism is a major industry here in Samoa. If people get this idea that it's not safe, and I can see that maybe there's a little bit of that happening in the Caribbean, where there's just one hurricane after the other, people start to avoid those places. So there's this negative feedback loops, if you want.
In the early 1990s, the damage caused by tropical cyclones Ophir and Val was estimated to have been four times Samoa's annual national income. Mario Hardy, the head of the Pacific Asia Travel Association, or PATA, says vulnerable tourist destinations must develop a survival strategy.
It's important for people to prepare themselves for these situations and also to understand what is needed to be done afterwards. And this is where PATA gets involved in most instances, is after the event, in the recovery part. How do you tell the rest of the world, okay, you can come back now, you can actually come and enjoy the destinations. We need your support, we need you to come and spend your dollars on our island so that we can actually recover.
There is a general feeling here in Samoa that the developed world isn't doing enough to combat climate change. Sonia Hunter, the head of the Samoa Tourism Authority, says individuals and governments overseas need to do more.
Every little thing you do, you should really be seeing, how will I impact on climate change? What can I do more to mitigate that effect? Because the people of the Pacific may not have homes in the next couple of decades or even a decade.
Samoa's Prime Minister Tuilaepe Sailele believes climate change is an existential threat to island nations. He said that any world leader who denied the existence of warming temperatures was mentally unstable. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Apia, Samoa.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The phone app Grab unveiled a new remittance service that allows people in Southeast Asia to remit money instantly and securely to receivers in another country using their GrabPay wallets. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the overturning of a Christian woman's blasphemy conviction in Pakistan, sparing her life, is focusing new attention on blasphemy laws. As VOA's Robert Rafael explains, variations of such laws are challenging global efforts to ensure human rights and free speech.
Angry protests rose up across Pakistan 2 weeks ago when the nation's Supreme Court reversed the 2010 guilty verdict of Asiya Bibi. The Pakistani Christian woman faced death by hanging for her conviction for insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Upon the court's decision, the Islamist party TLP passed an edict, including a declaration condemning the justices to death. Pakistan's prime minister denounced the group's statements, but Islamabad later reached a deal with TLP that included legally blocking Bibi from leaving the country. Pakistan is holding Bibi at a secret location. Human rights activists condemned the deal. Omar Warish is with Amnesty International.
What is really interesting is that the Supreme Court has upheld and said that someone has been acquitted, that these charges were false. The test is whether the government can implement that Supreme Court order, protect the judges, and protect Asiya Bibi.
The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom says blasphemy is considered a criminal act in 71 nations, including six, where it is punishable by death. Gary Bauer is with that commission.
In the Middle East, these laws are being enforced often in a way that not only violates the religious liberty of religious minorities, but, as I mentioned, is used to get even with people or to harass people or to make people limit their freedom of speech.
Bauer says the U.S. and other nations cannot allow regional security concerns to mute their support for religious freedom. Robert Rafael, VOA News.
Office workers often complain that their building is either too hot or too cold. Now, engineers and architects are working on creating sentient buildings that are smart enough to cater to the personal needs of each employee. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has this report from Los Angeles.
From airports to schools to offices, architects and engineers are trying to tailor buildings for the people inside.
I call them, first of all, sentient buildings or cognitive buildings. These are built environments that basically sense, perceive, and reason what's happening within them.
In an office space, researchers are working on the best way to integrate commercially available sensors into a building to maximize personalized comfort and productivity. This sensor reads the pupils in the eyes.
If you switch from doing a screen-based task to a paper-based task where more light is required, your pupil will dilate as a response to the sort of lighting condition. And with the machine learning algorithm, it could respond and actually provide more light, basically intuitively.
Other sensors can detect skin moisture, temperature, and heart rate. That data tells the artificial intelligence how a worker is feeling. It's called the person's thermal sensation.
Based on those understanding of individual thermal sensation, we can trigger the building system for additional cooling or additional heating.
These sensors are connected to
sentient furniture, such as this desk, with built-in sensors, can also create a personalized workspace.
And we have installed heating and cooling remedies and lighting options on the desk so that the requirements on the centralized system could be relaxed.
Users can program their ideal posture, lighting, and temperature into the computer. Then the machine can learn preferences based on the context of what work is being done. This type of desk is already being placed in offices. Researchers are also creating a package for existing offices that includes sensors, software, heating and cooling units. Experts say office buildings can become sentient within the next 5 to 7 years. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that is VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you again next week. Until then, have a great weekend.